Hey, Nerd Talk Nation, this is your host, Jordan Halstead. I am so excited for today's episode. Micah and I have been talking about this one for a couple of weeks, and I know that I always say that I'm excited. I understand that, but the reality is Marvel made me so excited with this episode, and so Micah finally got to finish it. And so, Micah, what are we talking about today?
Well, it's my fault that we're doing it so late, but we're talking about Echo.
We are. Yeah, so it was funny. I was texting him, and we were talking offline, and there were a lot of conversations of, hey, you need to go and watch this. Like, make the time, sit down, and go watch this. Between this and What If Season 2,
I think you hounded me more about What If Season 2 than Echo, to be honest. But
I think I did, but I also had more time because it dropped a couple weeks before Echo did.
Yes, so, and they dropped Echo all at the same time.
Yes, where What If Season 2 was every day. Yes. For the week of Christmas. So with that, we're going to talk Echo Season 2. So just general thoughts going into this series.
Marvel Echo Season 1? You said Echo
Yes, I'm sorry. Season 1, as we walked into this, as there was conversation of, you know, what does this look like? How does this work? Because Marvel has not been doing what exactly we want. And there's been a lot of people who are just like, man, I'm burned out of Marvel and all that. What were your thoughts going into Echo Season 1?
So I have a lot of thoughts, so this is why we do this. But I think that going into the series, I was like thinking that it was going to be boring. I didn't think there was going to be a lot to it. We had only just been introduced to Maya's character, Echo's character, in Hawkeye. And that was the only piece of which we got of her. And so I watched the first episode, and I think I called you and said, hey, I watched it. And I watched the second episode, and I was like, you know, I'm really not into this. But then the other day, I had some downtime at work, and, I brought my iPad with me and I just threw it on while I was doing some work in the background. And I'm like, man, this just gets better and better and better with every episode. And so I think it was helpful that it was only five episodes instead of like six or nine or however many some of the longer series have been on Disney Plus. And
yeah,
I didn't want to be like Mr. Negative Nancy about this show. I wanted to give it a fair chance, and I know that you, Jordan, have watched a lot of the Netflix Marvel stuff, Daredevil, Iron Fist, you know, Luke Cage, some of those things, and we'll get into that conversation a little bit, but like, I was thinking it was going to be aimed more towards that because I've only watched a little bit of that genre, that area of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which is, again, now canon all of a sudden, which we'll get to in a bit, but I was pleasantly surprised with how well they handled the show, and I appreciated it for a number of reasons as it concluded, and not for really the reasons you would think. Yes, I'm excited about Daredevil. Yes, I'm excited about Kingpin. Yes, I'm excited about that kind of long-term future for the MCU and the street level discussion that we'll have in a little bit. But like, I think what I appreciated most about this show was that they drew me in because Maya had disabilities, and Maya was deaf, and, you know, the only other time we've seen somebody that was deaf was in the Eternals. And
yes, Makari.
So, I think so. But like, I enjoyed the fact that they used sign language throughout this series because it made me pay attention more. Right. Yes. Like, I had to read the subtitles. I had to make, like, there were moments where there was silence. Like, there was some music.
It's playing not a show you can just throw on in the background.
Yes. And so like, I caught myself at times just like, okay, what did she say? And like, you know, there were sign language, using sign language because again, she was deaf. Also, we find out in the first episode how her leg becomes amputated. So she has two disabilities, against her. And so the first thing I appreciated was the fact that they really focused on her disabilities, not in a bad light, but like making it so that like people can thrive in this world, even though they have disabilities. And so that was the first thing that really caught my attention. The second thing was that, you know, there was a lot of we talked a lot about this in Blue Beetle when we reviewed the Blue Beetle film, but like the family dynamic, they included the family dynamic, and to my knowledge, the first time they've really included any sort of Native American culture into the MCU. And it was cool. They did it in a really cool way. And it was like, you see the struggle that Maya has between wanting to be with her family and wanting to serve Kingpin and wanting to, you know, get vengeance. And she has a right to be mad. But she also wants to be with her family and be left alone. Like, you could tell that there's just a struggle that she has throughout the entire show, which I really appreciated. Obviously, love the Daredevil stuff. Love the Kingpin stuff.
Oh, yes.
Something that I noticed, and you probably noticed it too, but like, I really appreciated the fact that like in the background of the show, when you're just watching it, like you see billboards with Fisk, you know, written on the background, you know, you see some of that background stuff that's going on and really laying the foundation for, you know, what we see in the Daredevil series with how powerful he really is. And I appreciate it too. And I'll let you gush about it in just a second, but like in the first episode, I really liked how they picked up where Hawkeye left off and they kind of did a short recap, but they showed it through a different lens, right? They showed it they showed it through Maya's eyes and Maya's dad's eyes versus Hawkeye's. And they incorporated Daredevil because Daredevil wasn't in the Hawkeye series. We get Kingpin, we get Maya, we get Hawkeye, we get Kate Bishop, but we don't get Daredevil. And so they showed it through a different lens and they showed Daredevil coming in, you know, which again connects the street level heroes, which is great. And we're going to talk about that shortly, but like, it was cool that they showed it through a different lens and that they included Daredevil just enough to remind you that he's there and he's coming, especially with his series coming next year. So I had a lot of thoughts. I was pleasantly surprised with how well the show, you know, ended up, and I really enjoyed watching it. And I would recommend it for those who haven't watched it yet. Like, it's not your average superhero story, but there's a lot of connectedness if you want to know more information about Kingpin and more information about Daredevil. And I'm sure we'll talk about that post-credit scene at the very end of the show. But what were your thoughts going into the show? I mean, I know that you're excited, but like, what were you thinking Echo was going to be when you started to watch it?
I was moving into this series. I genuinely was not like, I'm so excited for this character. Echo is not a character that I'm familiar with at all. That is not a character that I've seen a whole lot in the comics, not someone that has like a massive voice, like at the table. And so when you think of Marvel, now let's go 20 years back. So that way it's not like current Marvel, because current Marvel is very different. But like Marvel way back in the day, 20 years ago, Iron Man was not an A-list character. Your A-list was Spider-Man, Captain America, Thor, Hulk, and that's really it. Even the Avengers was not really like the greatest thing. And so,
fast forward 15 years, and you want more Iron Man.
yeah, and that's. I think that's fantastic. Some of the things that you can build on, but what you have to figure out along the way is where's the line drawn with how you bring these characters in? Like, who needs a show with their name on it? Mm-hmm. Because the reality is, like, people don't go and watch a show because they're super tied to this character. They're getting used to this character. This is the introduction of who Maya Lopez is. I think about Arrow. A lot of people, when Arrow came out, they thought it was a Robin Hood story. And I was like, no. I mean, he's a Robin Hood-esque character, but that's the Green Arrow. And I got really into comics at that same time. So, like, I knew who that character was. I knew some of these guys from when I was younger, watching cartoons and things like that. Maya's never been in anything that I've ever seen. So up until Hawkeye, like, I had heard about her, and I've read a couple comics where I've seen her kind of floating through. You had told me, hey, you should buy this Moon Knight comic. And she was in it for a hot second, the mm-hmm. book that we both have. And it's good. And it's not like I dislike the character. It's just I don't know her. So I was walking in and I took the approach that I adopted last year or the past couple of years. And because it's already 24, it just blows my mind. Just walking in with eyes wide open, just like an open mind, just ready to see what is the story you're going to tell me. And here's the other thing. They did this new thing with it called the Spotlight Banner.
Mm-hmm.
The Spotlight Banner, I had to research this. So Marvel Spotlight means that you don't have to know anything about the character to start there. Like that's a good starting point, which I think is genius. For Marvel to walk in and say, hey, here's a new character. They have absolutely nothing to do with anything else. Here's the first one, which technically, like Miss Marvel, Moon Knight, She-Hulk, they could all be thrown under the Spotlight Banner. That's totally fine if you like rebranded it to the Spotlight Banner. Because you don't necessarily need background context for these characters. But I love this idea that, hey, this is a good point for you to start with this character. Like you don't have to go back 20 years of MCU history to find out that this character has deep underlying tones with Iron Man or Thor or Captain America or the Hulk, like the original phase one lineup. Like I get it. And I think it's fantastic that they're doing something like that. So it made me very excited when I found out about this and moving forward into all of it. Other than that, walking in, I didn't really have expectations. I knew that I was going to have to do a little bit of sign language. I will say this, like when she did the sign language part, when Fisk gave her the eyeball technology,
mm-hmm.
that was genius.
I really enjoyed that.
I thought it was really, really cool because it worked both ways, that what she signed, he could hear, and then what he said, she could see in the signs. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's really, really cool. But on the flip side, all that, having the villain be the one to give you that technology, that was cool. Because it wasn't like Iron Man came in and saved the day or Ant-Man came in. Like none of these genius level characters, not necessarily that it was Scott, but just like Hank, like none of the geniuses in the MCU came in and saved the day here. It was Fisk and he put money into this. And like that's like Batman gets a lot of crap and I'm going to like show the bridge here, but you know, Batman gets a lot of crap because he doesn't have superpowers. Money is a superpower. I'm going to claim that right now. Like Fisk having that much money, like characters like Batman who rely so much on their tech, like 100% agree there.
Well, Bruce Wayne is also smart.
Yes. And I'm not saying that he's not like a genius or anything. I'm just saying that like with,
well, you think of like Iron Man, for example, like it's the same deal. Like what's he say in Avengers? He's like the billionaire philanthropist playboy, like, you know, like he
would argue without the suit. Yeah.
Right.
And he just runs like, it.
Right. And I think the same thing with Bruce Wayne, when you think about that, but yeah, I really enjoyed the, that was one of the things I wanted to say too, but you beat me too. But like, I really thought that was cool.
Yeah.
With part of the story where I don't remember what was episode 3 or episode 4, sometime in there, I think it was shortly before he gave her the technology, she was sitting in Kingpin's apartment and there was this woman that was behind him, like sign language, you know, doing the sign language for him. And then like they escort her out and they just kill her. And it's like, then she gets the, you know, the technology of the, you know, the sign language that you were just referencing. And so I think Kingpin and his sick, twisted, misunderstood mind was like, I used to do it myself. Why do I need somebody to do it for me? So,
yeah.
Yeah, it was really, really cool to see something like that. And it was so different, right? And it was different in a good way because you've got people, but again, something that was just a highlight for me was the fact that she was somebody that had, she being Echo, had, you know, multiple disabilities. And Kingpin's, you know, love and affinity for her, he was willing to do anything to communicate to her and get his point across. And so that included the technology of this whole sign language stuff. So, I mean, I don't know where you want to go with the conversation, but like, I just, you know, I don't, I know it's Echo series, but like, I just felt like they laid the foundation for so much more.
And I think that's the big thing about Echo was it, yes, it is definitely 100% Maya Lopez's story, but it laid foundation. It was, and I would, like, I know we all know my love for Daredevil. That is not a secret at all. But I think this is going to be a cornerstone to the MCU on Street Level Heroes. Like, out of all the shows, I think this is going to be a massive building block.
Well, and I think, I don't know if I told you after I finished it and called you, or if I told Chad from work the other day, but like, one of the cool things that they did with this series is that it felt like they very much closed the book on Maya and closed the book on Echo, but they left it open in a way so that they could revisit it if they wanted to. They didn't kill her. They didn't do anything. She just kind of rode off into the sunset. They could bring her back if they want to, or they could just literally leave it as it is and, you know, just move forward with, like you're saying, the Street Level Heroes. Did you feel that way at the conclusion?
Yeah, I think that the easiest way to handle for her, you can go one of two ways. You can either say, hey, we want to continue doing some Echo stories, and she's going to get like smaller event stuff, where it's like, hey, we're going to do like 5 to 10 episodes, nothing crazy. Because I don't think she's a character that like can hold a 20 episode show. I don't see that being her character. Unless like you did some fillers with other superheroes where she and Daredevil do a thing. I think that Echo could either be a part of her own thing and you bring in other heroes, or you go in and you say, hey, you're not going to be a part of anything until we need you in a movie or a TV show, and you become a side character. We gave you a 5-episode show for the sole purpose of building your character. Well, Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think too that like it was done so well that like, this is some of the stuff that you and I've been, I guess, pissing and moaning about, I guess, for lack of better terms, at the MCU and their storytelling lately. You know, Phase 4, you know, into Phase 5, like, they did such a good job of telling her story and introducing other characters. And like, again, if you've not watched anything in the Netflix genre of the MCU, Daredevil, Iron Fist, Luke Cage, Jessica Jones, The Defenders, any of that stuff, like, you may not know anything about Kingpin other than the fact that he showed up at the end of Hawkeye. And you may not, you may not know any of his story, but they did such a good job of integrating that with this show in a way that, like, yes, Kingpin was in the show, Wilson Fisk was in the show, but it showed how Maya was brought into the world, born, you know, had her disabilities, how she got connected to Kingpin, Kingpin's love for her, the ability to, you know, the abilities that she had regardless. Like, again, she wasn't like a superhero in the fact that like she had some massive, you know, WandaVision or, you know, Wanda or Vision type powers. You know what I mean? Like, she had disabilities and she used her disabilities for her strengths. And I guess what I'm trying to say is like, it just really grabbed my attention, unlike a lot of things have done in the last year and a half with the MCU. And I appreciated it because it like I told you, I think I told you, or I told Chad, one of the two, that as soon as I was done with Echo, I was like, man, I want to go back and I want to watch all the Daredevil. I want to go back and I want to watch all of the other stuff, the Netflix Marvel stuff, which, you know, let's get into that conversation, because Kevin Feige has said that all of the Netflix genre is canon now with the MCU.
Yeah.
What do you think of that? And, you know, moving forward, and they're bringing back characters from the original Daredevil cast. They're bringing back, you know, with the Born Again series, they're bringing back, you know, Foggy, and they're bringing back, I can never remember the girl's name.
Karen Page.
Yes. They're bringing back Karen Page, you know, Wilson Fisk, obviously Vincent D'Onofrio is going to play Kingpin. Like, they're setting up such a larger story. And I think Chad said this yesterday when I was talking to him about it. It was like, he's like, I think we need a break from the cosmic universe of the MCU. I think we're ready for a street level
MCU for a while.
MCU for a while. And that includes things like Spider-Man and, you know, with the Sonyverse being integrated in the MCU, like, you're going to get Venom, and you're going to get Kraven the Hunter, and you're going to get Morbius, and you're going to get Madame Web, and you're going to get the Defenders, and you're going to get Daredevil, and you're going to get Kingpin. And what was it you said to me yesterday on the phone, Jordan? You talked about how Kingpin, you compared him a lot to Thanos, but on Earth. And you said that, like, it's going
they're setting him up to be the street level Thanos.
Yes.
And just with, and here's what I really love about the way they're handling this, because a lot of characters, they're not creating them to be like massive threats. Mm-hmm. Like, does that make sense? Like it's very one shot stories. Like you go and you look at Ultron. Ultron was a one shot story. You look at S.H.I.E.L.D. and Hydra going off and fighting each other. That was a one shot story. You go in and you look at Whiplash or the Mandalorian, or you look at Wenwu. I mean, you look at all these different characters. They're very one shot. They are there one time. There are two villains, three villains that I've seen come back again and again and again. And that would be Thanos as your big one, Loki, who kind of isn't really a villain anymore. He's kind of his own anti-hero, kind of just doing his own thing. And then the other one is not Strucker. Zemo, Baron Zemo, having shown up in Civil War and then again in Falcon and Winter Soldier. Kingpin has such a slow, methodical, mapped out plan that honestly, you don't even have to bring him in for a super long amount of time. Like Echo, how much screen time did he actually have? Like
he might have been in the first episode, the fourth episode, fifth episode. But like even then, like, he was only in there for a few minutes in each episode.
And you could feel his presence all over this show. Like he's such a behind the scenes figure. But when he shows up, I mean, think about Hawkeye. He was only in Hawkeye for two episodes, and one of them was kind of a picture, and you didn't even see his face at first. Like they had to zoom in and you're like, oh shoot, that's Vincent D'Onofrio's Kingpin. And like, we kind of knew because there was rumors that he was going to be there. But if it weren't for that, we wouldn't have known that he was going to be there, because they kind of kept it in a shrouded mystery. And so then he shows up and I'm like, you're slowly building this guy. He's going to be a massive threat, especially, and spoiler here, the last scene in Echo, when he runs for mayor, if they set up Devil's Reign and they set up this whole a later thing that they eventually do with taking down him or taking him down from being mayor. Like if we get like, hey, Kingpin took mayor, and then like he shows up on everything that it becomes really big news, and you just see like the entire MCU, there's just ripples seeing him there. Like that'll blow people's minds.
Well, here's what I think, and I think moving forward, I think you're going to get that because, you know, like you said, spoiler alert, in the last scene of Echo, there's this post-credit scene of Kingpin Fisk on a jet plane, on his private jet, and they're talking about who's going to step up to be the mayor of New York City. And in the comics, and if they follow the story of the comics, and Chad was sharing with this with me yesterday, but like I haven't finished Daredevil, and I'm going to now because I have to.
Because it's good.
Yeah, well, it is good. Everything I've seen so far has been great. But the idea in the comics, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I read this yesterday. I have a Marvel encyclopedia, and it goes character by character. And I read about Kingpin's bio and his superpowers and all these things that he has as far as being a villain and a threat in the MCU. So, and this is where Chad thinks that Born Again is going to go, Daredevil Born Again. Kingpin's going to be the mayor of New York City. And in the comics, Daredevil, Matt Murdock, runs for vice mayor. But Kingpin doesn't know that Matt Murdock is Daredevil. Is that correct at this point?
I believe so, yes.
And in the Daredevil series, he doesn't know that who Daredevil is, correct?
Yeah. So part of that was he made a deal with, I don't know if it was Mephisto or whoever, but there was a moment where him and Spider-Man both, like, nobody knew who they were. But Daredevil, Spider-Man told Daredevil, and Daredevil was like, yeah, no, I know. And he's like, wait, who are you? And he was like, I can't tell you because it would hurt you. And so, like, he complete, like, Daredevil keeps his secret, but Spider-Man has to kind of, like, slowly tell everybody his. That is correct.
So I think what's going to happen, and, you know, I think you said this months ago, but, like, Kingpin's going to be your street-level villain, like your Thanos. He's going to be the mayor. And you're going to bring back – and Chad was telling me that in the comics that Daredevil just goes through this really, really rough time where he can't handle it anymore, and he leaves New York City. He leaves Hell's Kitchen. And so he's going to come back being, quote-unquote, born again, and he's going to run for vice mayor. And I think what you're going to see at the end of Born Again is that Kingpin's going to be the mayor, but it's going to bleed right into Spider-Man 4.
I think so. And yeah, I did say that. I think that it's going to happen that way. I think that
Kingpin may not be your villain in Spider-Man 4, but he's going to be in the background pulling the strings.
Oh, I have no doubt that he'll be. I have no doubt that he will be the villain. Okay. And I've said this a couple of times with you offline. I think that what will happen is Kingpin and Daredevil will be going at it, and then I think there will be a turf war.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Negative, I think, would be the one to pit Kingpin against Mr. Negative. And then Spider-Man and the heroes kind of get caught up in the middle, because they're already talking like another like Civil War kind of story that'll kind of take place. But it'll be a lot of the street level heroes. And I'm like, OK, if you do like a war on crime or a war on Kingpin kind of thing, like that'll be cool. But you're going to have the superpowers for Mr. Negative. And you're going to have like organized crime. I was like, man, if we get an organized crime movie, like that would be awesome. And like the superheroes aren't really even like heroes against the villains as much as it is. We're just trying to stop the villains from beating the crap out of each other and then like destroying all of New York City.
Let me ask you this. I know we're like straying a little bit away from the Echo conversation, but like Echo just set up so much more. Say we get, like what we're saying happens, and you have Spider-Man 4, you have Kingpin as your villain, you've got Daredevil in the background, you're bringing all these street level heroes. At the end of the Marvels, we see Kate Bishop and we see Ms. Marvel, which ultimately you think is going to set up the Young Avengers. Is there going to be any bleed over of that into this, or is it going to be completely separate, or do you think they're going to somehow connect that because it's all happening in New York City? And you've got all this stuff going on. But like you said in other episodes we've done, New York is such a big place, so they just leave it alone and leave it separate.
I don't
know. Because Kate Bishop was in Hawkeye, and you know, there's kind of that connection there, directly or indirectly. And you know, Spider-Man is going to be the leader of the Young Avengers, or at least we assume that that's going to be the case.
Yeah, that's a really, really good thought. I don't know how much bleeding over that's gonna happen, because Spider-Man 4 is now turning into something, from rumors at least, is turning into something bigger. And like, Kate Bishop is more of a New York hero.
Yep.
So I don't know, is she gonna be a part of Daredevil Born Again? Is Maya gonna come back from Echo, and like she's gonna help with New York superheroing? I don't know how much bleeding over this one's going to be, because comics is really easy because you've got 60, 70, 80 years of lore, and you don't really have that with the MCU yet. And you can't ever really get that because of aging out of characters and contracts and things like that. So I don't know.
If you were writing it, would you just prefer it to just stick with the Daredevil, Spider-Man, Kingpin, Defenders, Turf War type thing? Or would you somehow incorporate or lead up into the next generation, you know, beyond, you know, let's just do this. Let's say we get 4, 5, and 6, Spider-Man 4, 5, 6. We have the stuff with Daredevil. We have the stuff with Kingpin. You know, at this point, Spider-Man's older, and we get to like the 6th Spider-Man movie with Tom Holland, and it's like, oh, we need a new team. And then it just sets up Young Avengers, and he's training and leading, similar to what we see at the end of Age of Ultron, when there's the Avengers compound and there's like this whole new team that's emerging, and you see Wanda and you see Falcon and you see Vision and some others that are forming, you know, a bigger, better team of the Avengers. Like, I could see them doing that and then just doing the turf war, because there's so much you could do. And now that they've said that that the Netflix stuff is canon, you have this whole other batch of characters that we haven't even seen on the screen unless you've watched those series. You've got Jessica Jones, you've got Luke Cage, you've got Iron Fist, you've got Daredevil, you've got, and they've Punisher. All got their own Punisher, I forgot, because they, did I send you that the other day? That they're actually going to, the same guy is going to play the Punisher moving forward.
John Bernthal, yeah.
Yep. So, like, you got Punisher, you got all of these characters, and they all have their own stories and their own casts. And so, like, you've got plenty of stuff to pull from in this whole Street War conversation. So,
absolutely, you do.
I'm just excited to see. I don't think they could have casted anybody better than Vincent D'Onofrio to be Kingpin. And it's hard to believe he was the guy that played the farmer in Men in Black that got,
you know, I know, I was about to say, that's one of my favorite moments.
Yeah, my brother Lonnie loves that movie. And so, like, it's just, I remember watching that a lot growing up, but, like, you know, it's hard to believe that that was Vincent D'Onofrio. And so, like, you shave his head, you put a big white suit on him, and man, he's Kingpin. Let's go.
Well, and he's lost weight. And so, like, it's funny because they kind of make him a little bigger on screen. And I think it's some viewing shots and the way that they can, like, just kind of add to because, like, just how big of a character he is.
In that comic, or the comic book encyclopedia I was just referencing a little bit ago, like, every character in that encyclopedia, it says their origin, their height, their weight. And, like, apparently he's, like, 6'8" and he's 450 pounds in the comics. So, like,
yeah, he's a big boy.
He's a big dude. So, watching Echo just inspired me. I don't know if it inspired you, but it inspired me just to go back and rewatch all of this stuff that's going on in New York. And you joke or say all the time that New York is such a big place. It is. It really is. And so much stuff going on. I'm almost done with the Defenders series. And you mentioned on the phone earlier before we jumped on a call that you wanted to talk a little bit about the Defenders in that conversation. But, you know, I like how they, incorporate – the Defenders doesn't get such a good rap because it's not a great series. I've enjoyed what I've watched so far. But, like, again, if we get to Spider-Man 4 and 5 and 6 or whatever, and you have all this stuff going on, it's going to be money because you have so many different characters. Like, I love that they brought Stick back in the Defender series. And, it's so much bigger than I think we can imagine. And they can literally do anything they want because they have so many characters. And if it's Spider-Man just kind of being the anchor point and then Kingpin being the villain. And, like, that was something I loved about we talked in another episode about Spider-Man. But the Miles Morales the Spider-Verse movies. Like, in the first Spider-Verse movie, you get Kingpin. There's stuff in there that, you know, Kingpin's actually in that movie. I mean, granted, it's animated, but, like, you see, like, what kind of pull that Kingpin has in New York City. And so, man, there's just so many things you could do. What else do you want to talk about, like, in respect to Echo, the series itself? Like, again, I just enjoyed the cultural aspect of it. I enjoyed, again, like, one of the things that we talked a lot about with Blue Beetle is the family dynamic. There was a lot of resentment of Maya because she was gone for 20 years and then she comes back and sees her family. You know, what was your thought on all of that with the family dynamic, the cultural aspect, the struggle that Maya has from wanting to be home with her family, but wanting to kind of serve two masters kind of thing with Kingpin and, you know, her family?
I absolutely loved the struggle because she felt like, hey, can I actually go to my family? Can I actually go and be there with them? I absolutely loved that, and that she struggled with, you neglected me. You were never there for me. And I related to that. From someone who, being a child of a pastor, being in ministry, like, we lived thousands or over 1,000 miles away from my family, and it was hard. And so I get it. Like, why are you not reaching out to me? Like, you pushed me away. Like, you're not a part of my life. And we had to build our own family. And that's another thing, is like, sometimes we don't choose the right people to be a part of our family. And that chosen family, we've talked about that before. And I absolutely loved the way that they handled the character. She was awesome.
Who are some of your favorite characters in the show? Besides obviously the obvious with Fisk and,
okay, her cousin driving the truck.
Oh, he was hilarious. Biscuits.
I was like, man, him and Michael Pena, like, that was the kind of character that I was just like, those are the guys I want to hang out with. Like, telling crazy stories, doing crazy stuff, and hey, I'm looking for like $100 on a PlayStation 4. And then his cousin hears. Like, I loved that. I thought that was just, because here's the thing. Marvel has done this really well, and they've also done it really not well. They've done this idea of including comedy into their superhero antics all over the map. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And sometimes you absolutely lose the drama and the heart-wrenching moments because you drop the joke at the wrong time. Taika Waititi was terrible about that in Love and Thunder, and She-Hulk was terrible about that.
Can we say that, like, I feel like that Love and Thunder is going to be the New Age of Ultron thing in our show.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because recently you've been just hammering Love and Thunder.
I hate Love and Thunder.
There's no love for the Love and Thunder.
No Love and Thunder?
No Love and Thunder.
So I just think that with the MCU, for them to go in and say, this is a drama-filled series, but we're going to put a couple characters in that they're just going to be here for a moment or two, and they're going to help drive the story, but theirs is kind of like a, we don't really know what's happening here, but we're going to have you guys laugh. We're going to do a few couple things. Like, I really enjoyed his character. I thought it was really, really funny.
Yeah, I would agree. Also go ahead.
No, go ahead, because I don't want to steal yours in case it's the same one.
No, I was going to say I really liked Scully.
Which one's Scully?
He's the old man that, like, ran the general store.
Oh, her grandpa.
Yes.
I was about to say that.
Yeah, he's hilarious.
Gosh. When he looks at her and she's or the grandma, and she's like, "I'm not here to fool around," and he's like, "Then what are you here for?" I'm just like,
and then he like, that was awesome. He's seen Maya, and he won't tell anybody else that he's seen her at that point, and so keeping it a secret. And
I love that it was a very, Maya hadn't been there in forever. But she knew the certain people she could count on. And she walked up to him and just was like, "Can you not tell her?" And he just had her back. Like, How many people in this world have your back? And for that kind of storytelling of just, you know, being a white male, I don't always see this in the culture that is North America. But having family be the center of your life and of your livelihood and things like that, that's just not a American white kind of thing. If that makes sense.
I was gonna say that too. Just, you know, to piggyback off what you said, like, I think it's lost on the white American family the cultural family dynamic that other cultures have, and families.
But what is that? But what if that teaches the white man and the white woman how that is something we should have, and that we're missing things because family becomes important? Imagine how many families could end up not being broken because we start to learn from other cultures. And that's the other thing I absolutely loved about this show, was it's teaching us about other cultures. And I it was awesome. I loved it.
I'm not saying that Marvel's stealing DC's anything, but like, after watching Blue Beetle, I felt like, man, this is pretty close to the story of Blue Beetle, especially with the family conversation.
Which is funny, because I think this actually finished filming before Blue Beetle did.
Oh, well, dropped. Let's just say dropped, because Blue Beetle came out. You really get that family dynamic, and it's just really enjoyable. Like, it was just refreshing to see something different in respect to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and they still, again, I'll say it again, and I'll probably say it 100 more times, but like the way that they folded in Daredevil for a few minutes and Kingpin for a small amount of time as he was on the screen, you know, they're launching another generation of heroes, and they're launching another generation of stories through this show, which going into this, I never dreamed that they would do that.
Yeah. You
know, launching Daredevil, you know, cause this is going to bleed right into Daredevil Born Again. This is also going to set up Spider-Man 4. This is also going to, you know, as you know, Kevin Feige and Marvel announced, I don't know if it was last week or at the date of this recording, the week before, said that, you know, the Netflix stuff was canon. And so the people that have never watched that stuff, I think they're going to go back now and they're going to watch it. And it's going to give a lot more, you know, value and play it, you know, as the MCU moves forward. And, you know, as much as I love Infinity War and Endgame and Guardians of the Galaxy and all those, like we were talking about cosmic stories, like it's going to be cool to see a street level MCU for a while.
Yeah.
And it'll be cool. Like, you know, when we were watching the cosmic, you know, the Infinity Saga, it was like, well, I wonder who's going to show up where and who's going to be on what team. And, you know, one of the things I enjoyed about Infinity War is the different versions of teams that we got. Like, we got the one on Titan, we got the one on Wakanda. It was like, who's going to be on each team and how's it going to work? But I think with this three level concept, you can do anything. You know, you could have Daredevil and Spider-Man working together. You could have Luke Cage and Iron Fist working together. You could have Jessica Jones show up. It's really cool to see.
Yeah, and here's the other side. You could do it very much Young Justice style, which Young Justice was an animated DC show about the teenage heroes. But the way you do it is you've got your Alpha Squad, your Beta Squad, your Delta Squad. Like, you could go in and say, hey, we're all defenders, but we're going to be on different missions going and doing this, which I think would be really cool. And I think that if you could take some of that mindset, it would just really change things up. And like, it would be really cool if eventually they bring back Steve Rogers and that Captain America, and him and Punisher get to have a conversation. Because like, the Punisher looks up to Captain America a lot. And there's a moment in Civil War where he won't shoot at Cap, and he's like, nope, I'm here for you. And Cap just straight up decks him. And I'm like, oh man. So yeah, I think it's awesome.
The possibilities are endless.
Oh, I know. And here's the thing. We're excited again. Like, this is exciting stuff. Like, we didn't know if Marvel could get us to get excited about it again. And I don't know that they're going to be able to salvage it from everybody else, but they're going to be able to salvage it from me at least.
Well, it's funny because, like, I was so excited about, like, the possibility of X-Men and how they're going to include them into the MCU and stuff. And I know that we have Deadpool 3 coming out later this year. But, like, man, I could care less about the X-Men stuff right now. I'm more excited, I think, about what's going to happen in Daredevil Born Again and Kingpin and Spider-Man 4. And, you know, where do we go from there?
Absolutely. So, well, we're running out of time. Any last thoughts to echo and kind of the opening of the door to the Defenders universe and all that ground level heroes? Any extra thoughts?
If you haven't watched it, watch it. You will be pleasantly surprised.
I will say this as my final thought, that it was in Oklahoma. Like, being here in Oklahoma, it made me laugh. I was like, nice, because like Ohio was in Black Widow and then Oklahoma was in Echo. I was like, yeah, I like this. So it made me laugh. So, all right. Well, Nerd Talk Nation, thank you so much for hanging out with us. We will be pushing out more content. We've got a lot of stuff in the works. Mike and I love doing this. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will catch you next time here on Nerd Talk.